This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. On March 2nd, a coalition of conservation organizations filed a lawsuit against the Port of Seattle and the Port Commissioners, challenging the port's entry into a lease with Voss Maritime to open Terminal 5 to Shell's Arctic drilling fleet. Why was the lawsuit filed, and what are the implications of the Port of Seattle lease? To help answer these questions, I have as my guest Patty Goldman, Managing Attorney for the Northwest Office of Earth Justice, a nonprofit public interest law firm. From 2008 to June 2014, Patty served as Earth Justice's Vice President for Litigation, overseeing all of the organization's litigation, programs, and regional offices. In June 2014, she returned to the Pacific Northwest, where she is joining the team fighting efforts to turn the Pacific Northwest into a fossil fuel export hub. Welcome, Patty.
Good morning.
Would you begin by saying a few words about Earth Justice and the Northwest Office?
Sure. Earth Justice sometimes is known as the law firm for the environment. We are a national nonprofit organization that represents people when they need to go to court to enforce our environmental laws. In the Northwest, we work to protect the wonderful resources in this region, in mainly Washington and Oregon, Idaho, go into Northern California as well. And we also link that work to national and international advocacy where appropriate.
Now let's go on to the port lease. What are the terms of the lease that the port has signed with Voss Maritime?
Well, on its face, the lease says that it is a two-year lease, and the words in the lease say cargo terminal. But what we know from the very little public disclosure that existed is that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about making Terminal 5 a home port for Shell's Arctic drilling fleet. And that's what was discussed in the one staff briefing that's been made public, and the one PowerPoint, and the one segment of a public meeting where Foss talked about the home port and bringing drill rigs in and icebreakers and conducting maintenance on them before they go back up to the Arctic.
Before we discuss the lawsuit, what are the key concerns about the Port of Seattle serving as a base for ships that will travel to the Arctic for oil exploration?
Well, there are concerns at three different levels. From the international level, people are very concerned about exploiting other fossil fuel reserves. An article in Nature came out just a few months ago where they looked at our carbon budget. That's basically how much carbon dioxide, how much or equivalents can we burn and not have catastrophic climate change. And in looking at that, they said there are some places where the reserves just have to stay in the ground. And they called out the Arctic in particular and said getting that fossil fuel out is incompatible with the vision for what we need to do for avoiding catastrophic climate change. So that's the global level. For the Arctic itself, this is one of the wildest places left. This is a frontier in every meaning of that word. It's a wild, wild, undeveloped ocean. The area we're talking about is the migratory corridor for the bowhead whales. It's rookeries for walruses. Half of America's polar bears are there. I mean, this is just a pristine, unspoiled area. And if there were an oil spill there, no one knows how to clean it up in sea ice. What they did in Deepwater Horizon in the Gulf, that just doesn't work on sea ice. They don't know what to do when the oil gets under and in the sea ice. And the Coast Guard's 1,000 miles away. There's no infrastructure like there was in the Gulf of Mexico. And we saw that didn't go all so well there, even with that infrastructure. So that's, you know, one of our treasured resources kind of perspectives. Then if you take it down to the more local level, where it's a city issue or a Puget Sound kind of issue, we have a lot of concerns going on here about our elected officials, the port commissioners, operating in secret, hiding this issue from the public. They had a verbal non-disclosure agreement and changing what had been a large container terminal into a home port for Shell's Arctic drilling fleet. With all that means, people will come to Seattle, they'll see the Ferris wheel, and they'll see Arctic drill rigs. And what does that mean in terms of the greenest port on the West Coast or the vision for the city in attracting tourism and green businesses?
What has been the history of Shell oil activities in the Arctic?
Well, Shell bid on leases in the 2000s. to try to claim a lot of what might be up there. We're just at an exploration stage, but they were banking on there being large reservoirs of fossil fuels up there. And they've been trying to drill ever since. But as I said before, this is an experiment up there. And as the consciousness of the nation awakened with Deepwater Horizon, there were a lot more requirements for container kind of domes. You know, they had different kinds of names. So Shell's had to build new kinds of equipment. They also had very old drill rigs, some of the oldest in the fleet, and they were trying to retrofit them for conditions up there. The Kulik and Noble Discoverer were the two they were using. And so it all came together for them. They finally had the permits. They didn't quite have the containment dome. They built it, and then it breached like a whale and crunched like a beer can, in the words of the inspectors. But they did have those two drill rigs, the Kulik and the Noble Discoverer. So in 2012, they went to drill. They couldn't drill all the way down to where the oil was because they had no containment dome, but they could drill up to that point. And so they started to drill a little bit. The weather was horrific, as it is wont to be up in the Arctic. And when they were leaving, they had disaster after disaster. And that led to the Kulik being wrecked. They had to let it go, or they were going to lose lives of the rescuers on the barges. And Noble Discoverer had mishaps. They had the air pollution equipment went awry. The water pollution equipment wasn't working. They had a makeshift piece of water pollution equipment that just sent the bilge and the oil contaminating water overboard. And eventually, the Kulik was scrapped. Noble Discoverer was the subject of indictments. And its owner, Noble, pled guilty to 8 felonies in December and paid over $12 million in fines and community services and is still on probation. So it's not a very good track record. I mean, you have so many things that went wrong, which, you know, to us wasn't really a surprise having watched for years, because you've got old, old vessels being retrofitted for something that's never been done before and done so quickly. They're in such a hurry to get up there and drill that they've cut corners on safety at every turn.
Now let's go on to the lawsuit. Why is a lawsuit being brought against the Port of Seattle for their recently signed lease? What is the basis and what is the complaint?
So we're representing 4 groups in a lawsuit here in Seattle. We represent Puget Sound Keeper Alliance, Seattle Audubon Society, Sierra Club, and Washington Environmental Council. And all of these groups have a long history with Puget Sound generally, but also Elliott Bay, the Duwamish River, the cleanup there, and to some extent, particularly with Puget Sound Keeper Alliance, with Terminal 5 itself. And so the lawsuit, while there are a lot of issues about the Arctic and climate change, the lawsuit's really about the future of the port and the impacts of this use here in Elliott Bay and the Duwamish River. So there are 2 claims in the lawsuit, both going to how the port circumvented public process, public disclosure, and environmental laws. So the first is, when a governmental body like the port is making a decision that could have environmental impacts, they have to review those impacts. And that's just a typical requirement, and it's meant to make sure they look before they leap. It's similar to a requirement we have in federal law, and a lot of other countries have emulated. But here, the port said, nothing's going to really change, and they didn't do any environmental review. So they basically started with the conclusion, and so they didn't do that review. When they had the one public meeting, we asked that, wait, slow down, do this review, and they said, no, we're just claiming that the use is pretty much the same. The second law that we're invoking is the Shoreline Management Act, which was put in place to make sure we have an orderly, predictable way of figuring out what we're going to do on our shorelines and the associated waters. So Terminal 5 was retrofitted in the 90s. It was part of a huge toxic contamination cleanup and redevelopment to expand the container terminal facilities, because that's its designated purpose, but also compensate for them by creating a public park, Jack Block Park, and there's a little beach there, because it was cutting off some access. So it's a big process that's looking at what's the water pollution, what are the controls, what's the nature of the use, what will it do to public access and use of the shorelines. And so that's the permit that's in place, and it designates Terminal 5 as a cargo terminal. And yet this is not the same thing, but the port did not go ask the city for a new permit or a modification of the old permit, which is what it needed to do under the law. And if they had done either of these or both of them, we would have had an opportunity to provide public comment and to challenge the outcomes. And a lot of the debate that's happening around the city now would have happened through the ports process instead of after the fact and now in the courtroom.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Patty Goldman, managing attorney for the Northwest Office of Earth Justice. Our topic is the Port of Seattle lease that opens Terminal 5 to Shell's Arctic drilling fleet. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you say more about the specific harm being claimed by the groups participating in the lawsuit?
Sure. There are three different kinds of harm. So one is by the nature of the activities that will happen at Terminal 5. So with a container terminal, if you picture that kind of activity, there's the hustle bustle of bringing in container ships and offloading the containers, putting them onto trucks and trains and moving them to other places. And there are certain impacts you're concerned about. One of them is idling trucks, for example. That's a big issue with air pollution. But when you think about a home port, then you have, and particularly here, you're going to have these vessels coming from the Arctic where they've been battered and beaten and they need repairs. You think of that kind of activity, maintenance, repairs, which has different kinds of impacts. It's not a shipyard. That happens at other places when it's like a complete retrofit. But there are a lot of nasty chemicals and solvents and activities that cause water pollution. And so that's an important thing to look at. The second thing we're concerned about is what vessels we're bringing here. And these are vessels that had a bad track record. Shell, after that fateful year 2012, was investigated by the Department of Interior. And the Department of Interior chastised Shell for not maintaining good oversight over its contractors, like Noble. And the Noble Discover is one of the drill rigs that would come here. With the kind of track record they have, there is reason for greater scrutiny to make sure we're not going to let Noble Discover come here and leak oil like it did in another port in 2012. And the third issue is public access to shorelines. And here we have a park and a beach that were created to give that public access right on the northern edge of Terminal 5. So we have to make sure that bringing the Shell fleet here as a home port won't change that kind of public access. And so that's another issue that should have been analyzed.
What does the lawsuit ask the port to do?
We're asking the court to vacate the lease, and that would make the port start over with an open mind. And that's what you're supposed to do with these laws, is get this information, then make the decision. So it's really up to the court to decide to do that. And I mean, the other thing, just what we're fighting with right now in the lawsuit, is greater disclosure. Even in the lawsuit, the port and FOSS are moving slowly and not disclosing what they should to us and the public about what's going to happen at Terminal 5.
You've already alluded a bit to this, but would you say more about how the port has responded so far to citizen concerns?
Well, this has been an incredibly secretive process. So the first time anybody heard about this was in January. And that was just a few days before the one public meeting where it was discussed. And that time, the port staff and FOSS were talking about multiple uses of Terminal 5. There was one use that was bringing in components for an LNG, a liquefied natural gas plant, and assembling them to be shipped elsewhere. But what really had happened is even before that public meeting, they had developed the terms of the lease. It was all written out in a letter of understanding. There was no LNG facility. It was only the home port. And they signed that agreement the day of the public meeting. The port also had given a license already for FOSS to come on site and to change some of the equipment at Terminal 5 to turn it into this home port. And so even the one public meeting where they talked about it, it sounded like it hadn't happened yet, but it was a done deal. And then they signed the lease. Again, no public notice about it. They told the public after the fact. We had asked for some dialogue and public process. There was none. And so then when we went to court, what they've been trying to do is drag things out. And there have been a lot of people showing up at the public meetings who've been wanting to be heard about this. The line I've heard from some of the port spokespeople now is people are playing politics with this. But this is a political body. These are elected officials. And what they did was shut the public out. And in this city where people care about our port, they care about the Arctic and the natural wonders of this country, and they care about climate change, shutting them out is not a good roadmap for democracy.
Would you give us a sense of the Port Commission meeting held last week to discuss the lease?
I wasn't there, so I can't tell you firsthand. The press reports are talking about the Raging Grannies, and there were songs, and there were a lot of people who were passionate. There was another meeting where members of the public spoke. You know, the bits that I've heard have showed people from all different walks of life who are concerned about impacts on tourism and businesses, recreation, on climate, you know, all the full range of issues of this decision. But I think underlying all of the concerns is dismay, and that's probably an understatement, at the port and how it treated the public through the process. And so I think the port is getting a quick lesson in democracy and having to really think about how does it want to operate. So at the March 10th meeting, one of the commissioners made a motion, which is still pending, to limit the lease to a 2-year term unless it's extended by the commissioners. So two things are going on there. One is the lease by its terms is a 2-year term, but it can be renewed for an additional 2 years at the consent of the parties without any commissioner involvement. And so what this does is it puts Shell and Foss on notice that maybe there won't be an extension, but it takes the responsibility back to the commissioners. And that's a good step. They should bear the responsibility for a decision as controversial and as significant as this, but it's too little too late. That should have happened before this decision was made, and they really need to be accountable for this decision. So the commissioners really need to take the initial lease decision back, reconsider it, make a decision, vote, be on the record so the voters know where they stand and what actions each of them take.
Who is in favor of the lease, and what are the reasons?
Well, the reason they started to look for a tenant is they now are beginning a modernization project. They ended the long-term contract of Eagle Marine Services, which had run the container terminal, moved them to another part of the port. And so they wanted to get some money in during this period and find a tenant that wouldn't interfere with a lot of the modernization project, which is a different kind of construction and retrofits. So that was the reason, is to bring in some money during that period of time. And so I think, you know, generally everybody would like the port to get money for this facility and have it not be incompatible with the modernization project. And they say that there weren't all that many options, but again, this wasn't public, so it's hard to know what options really existed. And, you know, what these laws are meant for, what the public process is meant for, is for the port to consider all of the ramifications and to look at dollars that will come in under the lease is one measure, but to look at what this is doing with the public trust that they hold, with other investments in the city to be a green city, to attract green businesses, for tourism, just for a lot of the things that matter to this city, it's short-sighted to look at just the rent that will be paid. And I think they're learning that.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Patty Goldman, managing attorney for the Northwest Office of Earth Justice. Our topic is the Port of Seattle lease that opens Terminal 5 to Shell's Arctic drilling fleet. If the lease is honored, when is Shell likely to move its drilling fleet into Terminal 5?
Well, we've been trying to figure that out. And I think the judge would like to know, too. We were in court last Friday, and we have been asking the port and Foss to disclose when the ships will be coming. The judge asked Foss if it would be willing to disclose that fact. And again, they hedged and did not disclose it. And that would let us know how fast we need to move the lawsuit, because we really want to move it fast and get a decision before this is not only a done deal on paper, but on the ground and in the water. But they're not telling.
What is the timeline for the lawsuit at this point?
We filed the lawsuit on March 2nd, and we've been trying to move it along quickly. Unfortunately, the port and Foss are both trying to stall. They've been throwing procedural obstacles in our path, but we are going to move this case one way or another quickly. It's not a question of whether we can be in court. It's just which process, and lawyers can fight over those things. What really matters, though, is the merits, getting them heard, and heard before the ships arrive. So that is what we're determined to do. We're pushing hard to get the case moving.
What role does the federal government play in whether Shell will drill in the Arctic?
The reserves are all controlled by federal permits. So the Department of Interior is the primary regulatory agency. You need to have a lease, and then you need to have permits. You need to have an oil spill response plan. You need to have air permits and water discharge permits. And Shell's been trying to get all of those over the years. They currently are waiting for a decision that likely will come out the week of March 23rd, which is whether the lease for the Chukchi Sea will be reaffirmed. This is a lease that was awarded to Shell in 2008 in the administration of George W. Bush for a huge amount of the Chukchi Sea. And as I said before, right in the bowhead whale migratory area and walrus rookeries and, you know, really terrible places to be drilling for oil. That lease was put on hold because the federal government had not done a proper environmental impact statement where they had honestly disclosed how much oil could be produced and what the impacts were. They came out with that analysis and they said if all of the oil is found and produced, there's a 75% chance of a major oil spill up there. So now this is all before the Department of Interior to decide based on that record, will they reaffirm the lease? And if they do, then there are other permits that need to be issued. One is to take, which is to harm marine mammals. The other is for the exploration permit. And if that all happens, Shell can go up there next summer. The other case that's pending is we have challenged the oil spill response plan that Shell has to have, which grossly exaggerated the capacity to clean up oil. I mean, they said they could clean up far more than was cleaned up in the Deepwater Horizon spill in the Gulf. And there in the Gulf, we had infrastructure and mechanisms to contain oil that just don't exist in the Arctic.
So if the federal government denies any of these permits, will that mean Shell won't come into the port in Seattle, or will they still come anyway?
It would mean that the Shell fleet can't go up into the Arctic to drill. It might mean they stay in Seattle year-round instead of going up into the Arctic in the summer. We could see that in our skyline all summer long.
To what extent does the fact that the Port of Seattle is public rather than private play in the potential outcome of this issue? Does that make a difference, having a public port?
It's huge. It makes all of the difference. If this were a private port, could invite Shell's Arctic fleet here without all of the public process that we impose on our public officials. This is a public body that has the public trust. They can issue levies. They can get taxpayer money. That all gives them a responsibility to be open, honest, accountable, participatory in making their decisions for the future of this public port.
In addition to the lawsuit, what other steps are being taken in regard to the lease, for example, by the City of Seattle?
Well, the City of Seattle opened up an investigation of whether the port is violating its shoreline permit. So the shoreline permit identifies uses for various facilities. For Terminal 5, as part of this huge redevelopment project, Terminal 5 is a cargo terminal, and the mitigation was imposed for expanding that facility. All of that must be followed, or the port has to go get an amendment of that permit, and they did not. While we're seeking the amendment in the case, what the City of Seattle is doing is enforcing. So they're looking at whether the port is acting in violation of that permit. And if it is, the city can issue cease and desist orders. They can issue civil penalties. And the civil penalties could be both to the port and FOSS, which would be aiding and abetting the violations. And it even could be a misdemeanor if it continues. So this is a serious investigation underway of whether the port is violating its shoreline permit.
What would you say to those who claim that if Shell isn't based in Seattle, they will simply go to a different port in the Northwest?
Well, the only other port they've identified that's a deep water port that could handle the drill rigs is Dutch Harbor up in Alaska. And that's where they went in 2012. It is available. It's deep enough, but it's not ideal. It is pretty harsh weather conditions. It's remote, doesn't have the trained workforce and infrastructure that we have in Seattle. And the reason they left right before New Year's in 2012 was to avoid a fossil fuel tax up in Alaska, which was estimated to be maybe about $6 million. So they're clearly making decisions based on that kind of money, thinking Seattle's preferable. Suppose they'd go to Dutch Harbor, but it would not be as ideal for them.
What steps will be taken if the lawsuit fails?
Well, a lawsuit is one avenue that's working through the law and the courts to hold the port accountable. people are showing up at commission meetings and trying to be heard by their elected officials, and that will continue. So I don't think this is going to go away. I think the port has created an image problem for itself and a trust problem that it needs to address in any event.
Do you have a prediction about the outcome of the lawsuit?
Oh, I don't predict outcomes. It's a very serious case that we're bringing. I know there are people who've tried to belittle it, but I don't think the city of Seattle is taking this lightly by opening an investigation. So I think the port would be well served to take this seriously and try to figure out how to correct the violations of the law and rebuild the public trust rather than just go along the same way it's planning.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I think one thing that's amazing about this whole process is how vibrant democracy is in Seattle. And listening to people speak about this issue from the local to national to our climate policy to our oceans policy with offshore drilling and international climate policy, it's a place where people engage and feel they can make a difference and have made a difference. And that's heartening. And it's something that I think we should all treasure. And hopefully the port will learn that that's part of doing business in this great city.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Patty.
My pleasure.
You were just listening to Patty Goldman, Managing Attorney for the Northwest Office of Earth Justice. For more information, check on the web at earthjustice.org and click on their Northwest page. Again, earthjustice.org, Northwest page. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.